brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
I'm confiscating every foul wicked spirit in the host, the Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of a on the Ooze. Right now.
On the Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
To really happen to have a serial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Well, it's Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, T.C. Downey, and at this moment, Jason Sorrell is missing in action. Oh, wait, here he comes. Jace, go ahead, I'll put you on here. Or I think I will. Technical difficulties, gotta love them. Wow. So, for whatever reason, I can't get Jason Sorrell onto the air. Jason?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I hear you.
But we're not on the air. Oh, it just bounced me off. Hang on a second.
No, you're there.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
You're there. We're live. About, I don't know, a minute and almost 2 minutes into the show.
I've been trying to get in, and the studio page wouldn't load up right. Like, right now I'm trying to load up the chat room. I had to reload the page and everything, so technical issues. All right, the web page loaded up, the chat room loaded up, and we're here, man. So
rock and roll.
I got the intro and everything else, so here we are. All right, man. This shit even happens in professional radio, so what are you going to do?
Good thing we never claimed to be professional.
Right on. So, tonight we're going to be talking about happenstance. We're going to be talking about the idea of whether or not you are capable of doing anything and what precisely or what that may mean. In the sense of the fourth way and Gurdjieff. And I'll probably be talking about some other, you know, philosophers and everything else as well, because a lot of what Gurdjieff had to say, at least in this thing, I've seen either repeated by other folks or developed independently by other folks. So, but anyways, man, how's it going? What's been going on?
Man, everything's going pretty good, actually. I don't know if you caught the couple of text messages that I sent you earlier, but
I did.
Yeah, I don't know if you had a chance to drop by there, but I've been, obviously, I'm looking to create a progression in everything I'm doing and hopefully leave things that I feel are archaic in the wayside as I'm beginning to develop a new idea. Well, it's not a new idea. It's the same idea I've held for a while now. It's just finally starting to really take shape as to how it should actually work. I mean, I inherently kind of naturally have developed this internal dialogue that has given me what I feel is a unique perspective. And it's funny enough, because a lot of what really shook all the pieces together for me, we're going to be discussing tonight. Gurdjieff, obviously, huge influence of mine, and happenstance in particular is something that I feel is, well, and both literally and metaphorically, or metaphorically in multiple ways, key to kind of unlocking a piece of understanding that I don't think most people are inherently born with.
Right on, and I did get a chance to check out the project that you're talking about, so I did get the text message and everything else. I don't know if you're ready to start talking about, you know, actually where pointing people where to go to check this out, because I know it's still kind of in development, but what I've seen already, first of all, the look of it is just beautiful. I'm digging it. Just looking at it is cool. And then when you get into reading the text, reading the actual material, even just a little bit of stuff that you've already put up in there, especially, and I mean, we can talk about this later or whatever, but, you know, I want to give a little teaser here. Some of the phrases, some of the terminology that you're using that is, I don't know how original it is, but it's very refreshing. Whether some of these things you came up on your own or you're pulling from someplace else, it's new language, and I dig it. I mean, when I read some of these things, I was like, you know, wow, you know, that expresses it perfectly, and nobody's saying that. So I think it's going to be cool, man. When you're ready to launch, when you're ready to put this out to everybody. It's going to take the people by storm.
I really hope that it makes quite an impact. I mean, that one of the most prominent things that kind of stuck into my mind, and I can kind of throw this out here as a teaser both for the website and because it's very relative to what we're getting ready to talk about, is the idea of the sly man, the man that recognizes influence and recognizes happenstance and understands how it all works together. And that's something that I think that, you know, Gurdjieff should have, if he didn't really, which I can't really say because I'm not privy to, you know, the private writings that he put out there, the ones that, you know, none of us can get a hold of. Just the original few that were working under him got them. I really want to develop the idea of the sly man.
Right on, right. And something that I think a lot of fourth wave writers are missing, where they're missing out of the, there's a, I'm assuming it's a natural thing in the mainstream to want the ideas that you're pushing, the ideology they're pushing, to be accepted, to be palatable to the largest possible audience. I mean, that just makes sense, especially when you're, even if it's a nonprofit organization, when you're trying to fund something, just to get the idea out to more people, you want the idea to be as palatable as possible so that so more people fund it. But looking at Gurdjieff's writing, looking at what we know about Gurdjieff, and what other people have developed outside of, you know, Fourth Wave Foundations and everything else in regards to Gurdjieff, there's a lot going on there that isn't necessarily, you know, it's not for the mainstream. It's not supposed to be palatable to every person. And for, you know, given our values and our morals, especially in Western society, there's a lot of things going on there that simply isn't accepted as readily as it should be.
Right on. I think the most demonstrable thing that I could point to is if you ever listen to any of the reaccounts of people who have encountered Gurdjieff or knew him, I've heard a lot of them express that no matter where he was, he stood out in the room like he didn't fit there. Where the rest of the environment around him seemed to kind of flex and bend, he seemed to be stable to a point that it was almost as if he was warping the space-time around him. And I know that sounds somewhat unbelievable, but if you've ever met somebody who has this kind of overly developed essence and personality, then you know they're just larger than life no matter what they're doing. And I think that's something that's particularly important to what we're discussing this evening.
Right. And if people need to keep in mind, too, with Gurdjieff, along with singing his praises, along with discussing the possibility of, you know, what talent he may or may not have had, whether it was exaggeration or what have you, also keep in mind that his detractors were, you know, well, he was a con man. He was a grifter. He was all these other things that you don't associate with a holy man or a philosopher. Or maybe you do, but when you don't understand or don't agree with whatever ideology he's pushing, that's how you interpret it. And I think also, I think Gurdjieff developed that part of his persona as much as he did anything else. That he wanted people to doubt him. He wanted people to think it was a con, to figure it out on their own. And I don't know how much we're going to get into that, because we're going to be focusing on happenstance. And the premise, I guess, of our conversation this evening is going to be free will. Do you have it or do you not have it, and how do you define it? Because I think that's the root of it. It would be Gurdjieff's assertion that free will may exist. It's a possibility, but that the vast majority of us never experience in our lifetime.
Yeah, nor can we. We do not have the ability, at least not as the psychologically sleeping being that Gurdjieff saw us all as.
Right. That it's something that it has to be developed, and at the level that we're at, we might have glimpses of it. We might experience an epiphany of free will, but that real, true free will, simply based on based on the nature of our biology, wasn't something that we were actually capable of. When you consider the mainstream standards, the mainstream, what they push as far as the thought process is concerned, that you have free will, that you should enjoy free will, that you have every ability to do whatever it is you want to do and everything else, and it's just not necessarily so. So let me throw the call-in number out there. It's 347-989-1371. And if you want to jump in with your thoughts or opinions on what we're saying, if you have some idea about Gurdjieff, or if you want to talk about free will, if you think you can support the argument that you do have free will, that you're capable of doing something, and we're going to develop this idea a little bit further, so you might want to hold off before you call in and say, I can do whatever I want to do. Look, I'll do it.
Right.
We're going to be talking about what that means.
Right. Let me start off by kind of giving a layman's definition of what really is going on with happenstance, at least the way that Gurdjieff presented it. Let's take a lock in a door, and let's take a key, and you slide that key into the lock, and what happens? There's little tumblers in there that just kind of fall into their place, and if you have the right key, then you can actually turn the lock, unlock it, and go into it. The symbology here, obviously, is those little tumblers are the different influences or forces that are actually in play on you at that point in time, you being the key. And being able to turn the lock and move forward through that door, that depends heavily on the tumblers that are inside of there.
Right. And or another way to discuss it is, when we're talking about who you are right now, what you're experiencing this moment, well, what you're experiencing is the sum total of everything that has occurred prior to this moment, that you're at the pinnacle of time, basically, right now experiencing whatever. And for the most of us, we're guided by whatever's happened in the past. We're guided by those influences that have led us to this moment. And being guided by those influences, we have some wiggle room as far as what may happen in the next moment, what we may be able to do or may not be able to do, but we don't have the level of freedom that we think we do. Just like, that key has to fit that lock. Well, the key's already been designed to fit that lock if it's going to fit. The lock's been designed. The tumbler's been designed. All that's been set into place. So another philosopher that I dig is Robert Anton Wilson. And on dangerousminds.net, if anybody checks out that, there's actually an article about Robert Anton Wilson and one of his discussions. And he's a guy who talked about money, talked about wealth. And he talked about how wealth, the idea of paper money, the idea of these finances being wealth was bullshit. That if you're either born a Rockefeller or you're born somebody like Robert Anton Wilson, dirt poor. And wealth becomes a state of mind. It becomes a matter of, either you recognize what wealth is or you buy into the illusion of based on what you're told. Robert Anton Wilson was somebody who tried to develop his own influence, who tried to develop his own center for direction, and developed his own concept of wealth based on that. Whereas folks like Rockefellers would like to tell you to keep chasing paper money or whatever and to use that as the value system. And so what I took from this article wasn't the wealth part of it. It's about value systems and about recognizing that you're either handed your value systems, you're told what's important, what you should be going for, what you should be doing, or you break away from that and develop your own value structure, you develop your own value systems. The majority of us, even we talk about what little we can do during a day that we choose to do, the things I might or might not do, well, that fits within a very narrow set of parameters. There's only so many choices that you have available to you. In other cultures on this planet, they have an entirely different set of choices, an entirely different set of parameters. And even there, that's not free will. Free will would be the ability to do something that's completely outside of the parameters that were put into place when you were born.
Right. And that's actually, it's riddled throughout or weaved throughout every single level of existence or being. You know, those parameters are, it's not just like this linear diagram that's broken up by fragments or dots, you know, it's literally multi-layered and interconnected.
Right, and it goes from, and it's not just, we're not just talking about an artificial set of parameters either. We're not talking about parameters which are put in place for you, which a great deal of the parameters we deal with, that we actually have some choices in the matter, are artificially set. Those are the things we can actually struggle against, we can actually try to oppose, we can actually try to influence and change. Other parameters like, you know, breathing oxygen, like being affected by gravity, those kinds of things, that's just the natural state of our existence as, you know, the form of life we take on this planet. And we get into theory there as to whether or not, you know, again, with free will means being able to, even those limits, being able to get away from those things, if we're talking about true free will and absolute freedom, which Gurdjieff suggested in absolutist writing, but I don't think that he actually thought that even that level of freedom was a possibility. There are always going to be some parameters involved.
Yeah, I'm absolutely certain of that myself. He gives in one of his lectures, he gives kind of a metaphor about a winding staircase, and the only way that you could go up it is if you were to follow behind another man, but before you could take the step in front of you to move up one more level, that man had to take the step in front of him and move up another level. And so that demonstration is kind of like this idea of a human chain going up and down this staircase as it rises and falls, and you hope that when you do finally reach the end of that, the last step, that you are actually getting off on the floor that you wanted to. Otherwise, you might have to back all the way up and come all the way back up another flight of stairs.
Right, and along with that analogy, I mean, we talk a lot in these different circles and different people we talk about walking a path, left-hand path, right-hand path, you know, whatever, a path, we're walking a path. A lot of us, in my opinion, when we're walking a path, are seeking something, we're seeking answers, we're following something, so we're engaged in a process where, again, those parameters are predefined. Either you're doing it right or you're doing it wrong. And there are some people, there are a lot of people actually, that we associate with who are talking about how even that might be a flawed idea. That instead of seeking answers, instead of just walking the path, even though you're following somebody else, even though you're following behind, you know, the stones, the path stones laid out by other people, those steps are yours. Those steps are uniquely yours. And if you can take stock in the process of walking that path, you begin to have some influences to how you go about things. You begin to develop the kernel of free will. So instead of seeking answers, seeking to follow or what have you, I think it's more of a matter of asking the proper questions.
Right. I would agree with that entirely. I ended one of my essays some time ago with a little quote. Gurdjieff left with the questions, who am I and why am I here? And he came back with a different question, and that different question was, what am I really capable of?
Right. There was, and it was always open-ended. There was never a right or wrong answer. It was meant for every person to kind of develop their own idea. So especially when you start talking about these people, you know, who, in whatever circles we travel in, going, you know, that's the right way to do it, or that's the wrong way to do it, or this doesn't meet the definition, or that does, while sure, there has to be some sort of definition. to kind of, you know, cling to so that you can get things to associate and develop a forum for discussion. Eventually, at the end of the day, it's whatever it is you got going, whatever it is you're doing. If you can do, if you have a level of awareness that would allow you to make something happen or at least to influence what it is you're doing rather than just being influenced externally from everything else.
Right on. I think Dan Dreg kind of says it best when he says, you are not your ideas. I think that fits very perfectly.
Right, right. Which is ironic, I think, coming from Dan Dreg. Which I've been, you know, well, listening to Dan Dreg, he's been saying a lot of things that, you know, kind of like, you know, he's one, I know he sees it as all one thing, but he's very quick to let you know when he thinks you're wrong or incorrect about something, while he's also saying there isn't necessarily a wrong or incorrect.
Right.
But
right.
But yeah, that idea fits perfectly, that you're not your ideas. I think I just saw something on Ego someplace where they were talking about how this idea of self even is an incorrect way of looking at things. That the idea of self is actually something that's created by these extraneous things or external value systems, these parameters that are pushed on you. And I mean, if you take this far enough, you even get into astrology, as quirky and as kooky as that seems. The idea then that, you know, these external influences were in place when you were born, and that pretty much set your path. You begin to see maybe how, well, there might be a kernel of truth to that. There might be something going on with that that there's some validity to.
Right on, right on. I mean, but really, all in all, there's still a considerable amount of happenstance. I don't think that you can ever fully separate yourself from that.
Right. I agree with that. Not as we are now. I mean, that's something that that Gurdjieff talked about. That's, you know, it's worthwhile, at least in my opinion, and I think Gurdjieff's opinion definitely. And there are a lot of other philosophers, Robert Anton Wilson, Anton LaVey, all these other people who recognize the value of trying to get yourself more wiggle room, if you will, get yourself more, you know, increase the space between those parameters to give yourself more options, to give yourself more choices. But at the end of the day, those restrictions were always going to be there. You know, cultural definitions, national identity, gender identity, political identity, all these different things were going to be in place that you kind of operate in. You either are with it or not with it.
Right, and it really doesn't matter if you're with it or not with it, because it'll continue regardless. That's really the kind of the beauty of it.
Right, right. Yeah, when you were born, none of it mattered to you, and that last minute when you die, none of it will really have anything matter to you whatsoever. But it's how we develop. It's where we find ourselves. And there's people who talk about getting away from dualism. And like, well, how do you do that? You know, you talk all day long about how you want to avoid a dualistic, you know, process. But even biologically, we're aligned that way, where it's either yes or no, positive or negative. It's one way or the other. And if you can talk about how dualism is, it is. It's an artificial set of standards. But try operating outside those standards.
Right. Right on. Yeah. I mean, it's like defying the laws of physics. It's impossible.
Right.
The only thing that you can really do, and this is kind of the what Gurdjieff was trying to express, I mean, at least the way I see it, the only way that you can really do it is understand what those laws are, and then from there find out how to make them work in the direction that you want them to work in.
Right. This is where the discussion of the spy man comes into play, I think, because Gurdjieff recognized that it couldn't just be about absolute resistance to the system. And you see this with Discordianism, I think, where they talk about how, you know, it's the harder you try to hold on to something, the more it slips your grip. The less you try to hold on to something, the more it kind of clings to you. That there's this equal but opposite reaction in everything we do. So Gurdjieff recognized that the sly man doesn't necessarily put up a full resistance to whatever influences are going on. the Sly Man doesn't also necessarily totally submit to those influences. Instead, what the Sly Man does is try to find some middle ground where he's following along just enough that he can use those influences to his advantage, seek the influences that he has that are affecting him, that are most advantageous to what it is he wants to accomplish, and then pushing the parameters in that direction, rather than just being totally unaware of what's going on and continue to ride whatever wave was carrying you towards your next moment.
Right on. Right on. And that is exactly the thing that I am trying to procure at the moment on this website that we were talking about earlier. So,
it's a good start.
Right on. It's a very difficult thing to figure out. I mean, you're talking about condensing a vast amount of ideas and knowledge and kind of putting it forward. And in that, I kind of have gained an entirely new respect for Gurdjieff. I mean, here's a dude who, you know, would slam down glasses of vodka with the best of them. And yet at the same time, he had this total grip on how things really went down.
And I know the first time I read Gurdjieff, and he said, you cannot do, in his text, in his writing, he said that you cannot do, nobody can do. I, you know, oh, well, this is total bullshit. I was, you know, there's no fucking way this guy's making any sense. I can't do. I don't have free will. I don't have the ability to be and do whatever the hell I want to be or do. And it took me a while to wrap my head around exactly what it was he was saying, exactly what he meant, and to prove it to myself, which is something that Gurdjieff was big on. You don't take his word for it. Go out there and try proving it yourself. Try applying these ideas on your own. The whole idea that, you know, it's we can't do. We can't accomplish necessarily as freely as we think we can. When you start to recognize those parameters, when you actually see the walls that are around you, well, then you can navigate them. You can negotiate them. Whereas if you're totally unaware of the walls are even there, you're never even going to begin to put up a resistance. How could you? Because as far as you know, there's nothing there to resist.
Right on. It's kind of like a weird spin on the Emperor's new suit. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, it's not that you thought you were nude when in fact you're wearing a straitjacket.
Exactly. Straitjacket,
right.
Leg chains and cuffs, one of them little Hannibal Lecter face masks. You literally cannot do anything.
Right. The horse blinders or whatever, the things in front of your face, the whole bit. Yeah, exactly. And it's not so much, it isn't that you can't do anything, I think, but the choices you think you have, you don't. You're given a very limited set of choices. And there are folks, we talked about how I don't believe that there is a system. I don't believe that there is an organization or anything like that. But as our society has developed, we've developed certain parameters, certain ideas, certain systems for doing something that if you're in the right position in our society, well, it's very advantageous for you to perpetuate those systems and continue to make people think that you only have X number of choices. You have that your information should come from these sources and these sources only. All kinds of things. You know, you eat only these things because anything else that you might eat that you can go out and get for free, well, we don't have any control of that, so we can't make any money off of you eating those things. It's definitely a set of blinders that you think that that are in place that you don't see, you don't recognize. And that's the first step, really, is recognizing that you have restrictions. You don't have freedoms.
Right on. Yeah, you have restrictions. That's exactly right. What's funny, lately I've been doing a lot of work on a motorcycle I bought. And it's interesting how certain things being restricted can actually really slow the whole vehicle down. It can almost put it to a dead stop and completely dull any real potential coming from it. You know, something as simple as having a 1-inch muffler instead of a 3-inch muffler or having a limited airflow coming in through your intake. You know, these kind of things can really kill the full potential of the engine that you're working on. And the same kind of goes in every aspect of life.
Right. Well, I mean, and you can look at the larger picture also. I mean, look at our society. Look at gender identity. These are parameters. You know, you identify as a male or female, and as a male or female, you behave in this pattern through this system. And if you have somebody out there who tries to go, you know what, I may be biologically X, but I think my behaviors are going to go with Y or whatever. It's you completely skew some people. They lose their minds basically. You know, you have nothing. They have nothing to do with this person. This person has nothing to do with them. But they can lose their shit and try to regulate what's going on. Same with religion. Let's say you're all talking about all these different religions. We talk about the basic moral practices and values. The values are basically the same. You know, be good to everybody else. Try to live right and what have you. But because you don't worship the same God, because you don't worship, have follow the same laws, or because you have different ideas about social standards or whatever, you're ready to get up and kill somebody over that shit. And it's you lose your mind again. And that's what Hillsgurgeff talks about, that we all basically are operating under this, constant neurosis, that we're psychotic machines, not just mechanically behaving, but mechanically behaving broken and insane in our thinking because of these parameters, because we're not aware of how we're being influenced.
Sure. Well, I mean, think of it this way. You set up a box. You put a mouse in on one side. You place a clear see-through divider between them. And on the other side, you put a big block of smelly cheese or whatever it is, and just watch that rat drive itself insane trying to get to what it wants.
Right. Right. And it might ignore, you got the big block of cheese that the rat thinks it needs. If we're going to take the analogy even further, if the rat's been told that, the cheese is the ideal, the cheese is the thing you want to have, well, it's going to ignore all the rat pellets, or it's never going to be satisfied with all the rat pellets. Even though the rat pellets are perfectly nutritious, will help the rat survive, and it has plenty of the pellets, it will continue to go after that cheese that it can never get. And that's the system that we find ourselves in. That's our inability to do. That we can't just, we have trouble just letting go of these values. And I think once you develop the awareness, once you have an understanding that you need to really evaluate who you are and what you've got going on, one of the first things you need to look at are your values. What values do you believe in? What are the things you've been chasing? And is that really what you need to be going after?
Right. Well, I mean, for certain, fucking 26-inch chrome spinner rims on a fucking Dodge Neon that's tricked out. That's definitely not the answer.
Well, I want to give the. I see there's a lot of chat going on in the chat room and everything else. If you want to call in 347-989-1371, and you want to share your thoughts on the ability to do it or inability to do. It looks like the folks that are chatting, most of them seem to be in agreement with us. I know that there are some Kurdish students in the chat room that know what we're talking about and are familiar with these ideas. I think the folks that weren't familiar with these ideas, it looks like they've already dropped off. When I first heard these ideas, the inability to do. I couldn't wrap my head around it. I put the book down and said, this clearly isn't for me. And had to pick it back up again and give it another shot to really begin to understand. And it's been immensely helpful in my life as far as I'm concerned, because now I'm beginning to deal with the reality of things, as they are, rather than having some sort of a delusion about what it is I am and what it is I can do.
Right on. I think that's really, as you start peeling away those delusions, you'll find that a layer that you thought you already peeled actually has another layer or 10 sitting right directly underneath it. So, you move this one layer just enough to be able to do this one thing, and then you find yourself stuck again and can't figure out why. And it's because you still have this other, five sections that you have to pull up before you can get to it.
Exactly, and that's another part of it that I think people have trouble wrapping their heads around, is that there's no solution, basically. There's no, not at least as far as art existence is concerned here. Art existence, as it's concerned here, is just you do the best you can with these ideas. You try to get as much as possible. Another aspect of the Slime Men part of it is that, you know, being involved in a Gurgent discussion group, we've been told a number of times by the people leading the discussion group to, you know, be selfish about this process. Be selfish about what it is you're coming to these group meetings for, because it's for you. You need to go after this yourself. You don't have time to be courteous and be polite and wait for other people to, you know, to speak their piece. You need to step up and you need to take it. You need to be going for it. So, you know, this is the Sly Man part of it. That the Sly Man isn't talking about altruism. He's not talking about trying to make the world a better place for everybody else. He's only worried about making the world a better place for himself. And he's not concerned whether another person could do or not do. If they wake up and figure out that they can do more, that they can start to influence things, well, then maybe you can collaborate with that person and begin to make something else happen. But as far as trying to get everybody to start doing, you know, again, once you have that kind of absolute resistance or total resistance to the system, well, the system's going to come back and slam down that much harder. So it's not in your best interest to have the majority of the people aware or awake in these kinds of things.
Right. And any quest to even try to make that happen is self-defeating for the same reasons that you just outlined, and that is that the harder that you press against the wall, the harder it will collapse on you when it falls.
And of course, worse is the delusion that you have enough information, that you have enough going for yourself, that now it's time for you to actually start telling people what to do. And I know here we are on this radio show, we're having a discussion, and I urge everybody that if you're taking interest in this, don't look to TC or I to be, you know, somebody saying this is how to do this or do that. That's not our thing at all. We're putting the idea out there and kind of discussing it, hoping that other people will pick up on it and do the studying for themselves, do the research for themselves, try it out. Try these things out, these ideas that Gurgent put out there, or whoever you're following. Read Robert Anton Wilson. I mean, he's a huge guy about, you know, who's about reality and your actual free will and your ability to do or not do and that kind of thing. But go out and check this out for yourself. And I kind of lost my train of thought here. The idea being that, you know, trying these things out, figuring it out for yourself is the whole point, is the whole effort that Gurdjieff put out there, which is why when one of Gurdjieff's students would really cling on to Gurdjieff and think they're actually starting to figure things out, Gurdjieff typically kicked that guy out, said, okay, you need to go off on your own for a while and be away from me because you're becoming too dependent on my ideas rather than developing your own.
Right. And I mean, that's something that I've adamantly was protested that as being the case throughout my entire understanding of Gurdjieff, is that he, in fact, was completely against the idea of really being any kind of teacher. He was simply just kind of like a salesman or a demonstrator in a way.
Right. That's what I got from his readings too. When you see these people, they talk about him being a teacher. They talk about him being a master even. And when you read Gurdjieff himself, he seems like just somebody who wants to work with other people, because he was still doing his own development. He was still working on his own process, on expanding his own parameters, and part of his process involved putting the word out to other people and talking about these ideas in public.
Right.
But Gurdjieff never came across as a guru or a spiritual leader in his day-to-day efforts.
Right. I mean, he only began actually holding these little sessions when he came to the idea that he needed to expand his influence beyond the small sphere that he interacted with at that time. I mean, that's really the whole reason that he let Ouspensky write that book and started putting books out there. The books that he put out there, if folks who read them haven't figured that out yet, they were a mental exercise more than anything. I mean, he kind of in a very trickster sort of manner, referred to it as being esoteric Christianity, which is probably one of the biggest oxymorons I've ever heard.
Right, and it was definitely serving his own purposes. He didn't put this information out there to necessarily benefit other people. It was, you know, helping him accomplish what he needed to accomplish, which is, again, why folks referred to him as a con man. Because if you didn't understand what was going on, maybe if you did understand what was going on, you either served his purposes if you were dealing with him and working with him. If you didn't, he didn't deal with you. He didn't work with you. And that was the example he set for those people who were following it. That's the example that he put out there. Do for yourself. Be greedy. Go out there and get what you need to get. And figure it out. Figure it out on your own.
Right. And the thing... Go ahead, man.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, man.
I was just kind of chuckling because he even layers that message and ideas that maybe seem a little egalitarian. Ideas like we're all interconnected in one way or the other, that we're all subject to these same rules, that if you look hard enough, you can see that we belong to a larger organism, but it wasn't really being put out there in the sense of this greater good for humanity as much as it was realizing that, you know, you're the linchpin in this train or this machine, and all you have to do is just kind of push yourself out a little bit and you'll eventually wiggle out of the spot.
Right, or when he talks about people being asleep versus being awake, well, if you are awake, you have advantages over those people who are asleep. And he and Spetsky talk about those advantages. That if you're asleep, basically if you're being influenced by all these different things, well then whoever's awake enough to influence themselves could also be influencing you. Now the sly man isn't going to want to have everybody wake up because then his ability to influence people, the people around him, is diminished because everybody else is awake. So the sly man only wants those people who could awaken themselves, only those people who have the will to actually become develop the same type of awareness about the influences around them, about the need to be more aware of self. Only those people are the people that he wanted to deal with, the sly man. Otherwise you got a bunch of knuckleheads basically being awake, and then you can't accomplish anything if everybody's trying all this at the same time. If you're not ready for this, if you're not ready for this type of awareness, for the responsibility, if you don't have the strength of will to develop it on your own, it can't be handed to you, and if it could be, it would diminish it for the whole. Going back to Gurdjieff, they talk about resources, they talk about energy, so there's a finite amount of energy available out there, there's a finite amount of knowledge that's available. If you spread it amongst everybody, nothing can be accomplished with it. So it takes certain people to basically hoard it and put it together to make use of it, and it's the results of the use of that knowledge that benefits the majority of the people.
Right on. Right on. Now, as someone who, you know, is also a philosophical Satanist and kind of an old school one, the tricky thing I find there is actually negotiating. You know, using your influence that you've developed to your own advantage and actually holding responsibility for what you do. It's kind of a tricky thing.
Right, because you can barely quickly find yourself engaged in an external system, basically. You very quickly do something and think that you've done enough. And find yourself slipping back into whatever processes. If you don't take ownership of your actions, if you don't take ownership of what it is you do or don't do, it's very easy to delude the self into believing that you've done enough. And we've both experienced that kind of thing, where you've got somebody that thinks that they've read a few books, they've talked a good talk, and now they no longer really have to struggle or strive to do it. Now it's just a matter of, preaching to the choir, telling people what it is to do, how to go about it. That they become so wrapped up in whatever new identity they've created themselves that they don't recognize that it's just another artificial system. It's just another set of parameters, and they are still limited in what they can do or not do.
Right on. I'm trying to think, man. I mean, we really hit this whole happenstance thing like a ton of bricks.
Well, and it really just comes down to if you recognize that your choices, the things that you do every day, that even though you might think you can do other things, even though you might think that, you know, at any time you want, you can go ahead and go out and do whatever you want. Well, keep in mind that the things that you might do otherwise, the choices that you might make rather than going to work, well, even those choices are limited based on, like I said, cultural identity, national identity, your gender, your particular community, your class, your financial status, all these different external influences limit your choices as to what you can do or not do. And it's people like, and I keep bringing his name up because I'm a huge fan, Robert Anton Wilson, co-writer, co-author of the Illuminatus trilogy. So if you haven't read that, check that out. Robert Anton Wilson was really one of these guys who just kind of said, you know what, I'm going to put all this shit down. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to let it all go and really deal with just the basics. And from the basics, build up my ideas. From the basics, build up my concepts and my values. And Gurdjieff talks about this. That in the beginning, you try it out and you try to get it to work in the real world. A lot of what he's trying to say when you say go out and try to do these things in the real world and make that happen is because he wants you to recognize, first of all, how much artificial bullshit you deal with in the real world and how it's not worth your time. And if you finally get to a point where you're fed up with it, well, then you turn your back on all the superficial shit and you start getting down to the core. You start getting down to the crux of things. You start defining your own values and yourself, and that's when you begin to be able to do a little bit more compared to not being able to do anything at all.
Right on. I think with enough effort, you can go even further beyond that little bit more that Gurdjieff envisioned. I think Gurdjieff, in a way, was sort of pessimistic. I believe that his view was tainted from whatever wars were going on, and what was it, Armenia or Russia? Where he grew up. I think it was Armenia, actually. So I think in a way, you know, he kind of already was predisposed to this nihilistic mentality. And instead of fully embracing the potential of man and some blind stride towards it, he went for the opposite extreme, and he really wanted everything to be completely tangible as a possibility, or he wasn't going to put anything out there about it, you know?
Right. And it was just a matter of, when you think about a lot of it, it's just a matter of common sense. It's truisms that we say kind of off the cuff without really putting any stock into it. You know, that you're born alone and you only have all, when you're born, you only have yourself to look to. And when you die, you're going to do that alone too. So if you live life being concerned about the opinions and the influences of other people, all these other people around you, well, you're missing out on the best part of life. You're missing out on what the sly man knows. That at the end of the day, it's all about you and what you can accomplish and what you can do or what you're trying to do bettering yourself. It's not about meeting the standards that are placed upon you by all these external influences.
Right. And it's about taking the power away from happenstance and kind of giving it a little push and making it a little more intentional.
Right. Or recognizing that you can use it to your advantage. You can begin to use it as a lever to move yourself towards the things you want to do. Happenstance can work for you just as much as it can work against you. As most of us are now, whatever happens, happens, and we just accept it. And we accept, you know, we even might even think, you know what, our planning, our prior plans kind of went into that. Well, your plans were established by whatever parameters you fell within. You only had so many choices to begin with anyways. Whereas if you actually start seeing how happenstance works, you can begin going, you know what, I want, of the choices I have, I want this thing to happen more than I want these other things to happen. So I'm going to start investing my energy at this moment in those things as much as possible that I want to happen and begin ignoring this other shit. And it's just moving the dial, basically, towards the set of influences that you want to have rather than the set of influences you happen to fall under.
Right. I guess kind of think of it in terms of adjusting the, the position of a satellite dish.
Right, right. Yeah, what channel are you trying to watch?
Exactly. It kind of sucks getting CCTV over the Playboy channel. You know, you need to move back a degree or two.
If you find yourself watching Oxygen, there's a problem.
Right on. But I really think that's how Oxygen came about. Lifetime and the porno channel kind of overlapped long enough for somebody to say, oh, wait a minute, we could do Oxygen.
Right.
It was late night, and it was actually Skinamax, now that I think about it. It was Lifetime and Skinamax.
Right on.
Something that I think that it would be fair to make mention of this show, since we've done this whole build-up about you can, you know, pay attention to these influences. You can shape things by understanding how happenstance works. What we haven't done is really give a model for how you begin to understand that. And I think what's funny enough is this is really the horse before the cart, the way that we're explaining this. But in prior discussions that I've seen happen, the cart is usually put forth as the first thing and with little understanding of that horse in front of it. It begins with the idea of observing yourself. It begins with the idea of watching not just you and how you react to things and what emotions are forming in you, but looking at what external values are there and in place at that time. It's not something that you can just do at a moment in which you feel a sudden rush of at one particular emotion, said it's something that you have to constantly be doing. Being there when you're working. For artists, we kind of understand this because if you start to daydream in the middle of creating some painting or picture that you're drawing, it's not going to be too long before you back up and go, oh, fuck, I just screwed up. I wasn't paying attention to the technique I was using, and so this line is now way too thick, and there's nothing I can do to correct it.
Right.
So.
But go ahead.
Oh, please.
I was just saying, yes, you have to observe the self. You have to have a serious analysis so that you can begin to see, when you see how you're being influenced. When anytime you walk away from a situation and go, fuck, I wish I had done something else. I wish I had said something else. I wish I had made a different choice. You begin to recognize that, well, the reason you didn't operate the way you wanted to is because you weren't aware of yourself and you were operating under whatever parameters were required, whatever parameters were predefined for you, rather than going based on your own choices, based on your own, own needs or desires. And I think that you either have the proclivity to do this or you don't. That if you can't be objective about self, that if you can't step outside of yourself and recognize, oh, geez, I'm being an asshole, or, oh, geez, I sound like an idiot, or whatever. If you don't have that ability to recognize the self and observe the self without any judgment or without any bias in favor of yourself, then this will never work for you. You'll never get it. If you do have that ability, if you do have that proclivity and are willing to engage it, because it's tough, man. It's tough to take a serious look at yourself and see the harsh truth, basically. It's tough to be honest with the self. But if you can do it, that's when you begin to see how you are more often influenced rather than influencing. And being aware of that allows you to begin to make changes.
Right, which is why I guess in some ways we talk about listening to external criticism, not to a blind extent, but rather to give it whatever full consideration it deserves to be given. So you know, if someone comes along to you and says, you know, you're being a total idiot or you're being a total asshole, step back for a minute and, you know, clear away the premise that, oh, wait a minute, I'm not doing that. And take a look and see if it really is manifesting the way that they see it is.
Right. And you kind of have to hone your ear for that kind of criticism. I mean, sometimes there's going to be criticism that you get that is just blatantly helpful. That is, you know, it's in the tone, it's in the way you're approached, that the criticism you're being given is, you know, the intent to improve upon you. But when you get some guy who's just going off and giving you, you know, giving you shit, then you have to go, okay, well, is that shit valid? Is there something to it? Most people don't even question it, like you're saying. Most people immediately react with, no, there's no, you know, there's no fucking way. Once you begin to look at that, if you can, even if it's coming from somebody who has an agenda, who has something going for them by trying to tear you down, it's still worth taking into consideration. And again, it's, I don't think every person has that ability. I think it takes a particular personality type to be able to take everything, including the negative, and go, okay, how can I use this? Which would be a tool of the sly man. A sly man tries to figure out how to use pretty much everything that's handed to them.
Right on. It's kind of a primal notion, you know, use every part, get something for everything that you're dealing with.
Right on. So we got about 4 minutes left, 3 minutes, 30 seconds left or what have you. I think we kicked the shit out of this topic.
yeah, it's dead.
So, yeah, if anybody wants to continue this discussion, they know where to find us. And, you know, you can go ahead and listen. I mean, this will come up again. We every once in a while here on the Outbreak Edition, we flow back towards this idea of the fourth way, of the sly man, of these different processes we're engaged in. Because this is one of the big things that TC and I have in common is this, you know, pursuit of these different ideas as students of Gurdjieff and the fourth way. And along with other philosophers, of course. But next week, I think this is next week. This is a show I was actually looking forward to. I thought it was going to be tonight's show. We're going to be talking about everything we learned from Fight Club.
Awesome.
Right. So you're going to see, we're going to basically everything we're talking about tonight. You're going to see how it was reflected in the book and the movie. Fight Club, because it's there, man. If you watch Fight Club and everything else, the things we're talking about are right there in place. And I don't know, it suggests some potential, I think. So that'll be a cool show. Do we got anything else?
No, that's it, man. I would like to, after we go off the air, if I get a chance to chat with you, I'd love to get a little input from you, maybe see if you have any questions, because I'm trying to figure out what things I need to answer next.
Okay, well, I'll just call you when we're off the air. I got a couple things, I guess, real quick. We've got prints for sale now, 11 by 14-inch prints. This is on cardstock art prints. There are 13 pieces. On Creative Body Studios on the website. So if you dig the artwork and would like to own a piece of it, this is an inexpensive way for you to have some of the artwork you see on the website. I don't know if anybody checked out the new blog I put up. Friday night, I got an offer from a prostitute to do tattoos. It's not the first time I've got an offer to do straight sex for tattoos. Normally, though, I just pretty much, you know, flat turn it down. But since I'm writing this blog on tattooing, I thought instead I'd go ahead and get a conversation going and see what happened. And there are pictures and everything else. And if you're listening to the show and you're at work, these pictures are not safe for work. So you can access that blog from Creative Eye Studios as well. There's something else going on, but I can't think of what it was off the top of my head. So those are the two things, yeah.
Yeah, that's understandable here, man. I mean, I think really we gotta, like, as we think of these things, start writing them down. We should, like, just save the last 5 minute block for, you know, this is what's going on.
Right on. Yeah, we usually get to it, man, when we wrap up the last 5 minutes. We got about 30 seconds left. I don't know, man. Anything else?
Nah, that's it. I'm gonna roll the outro.
All right, I'll give you a call in a minute.
Sounds good.
Later.
Later. That's granted the button's going to actually put. Oh, forget it.